As you know from the call for this conference, it is a short half-day event that will be composed of two main sessions. One will be purely research-oriented, another one will be more practice-oriented and in a form of roundtable debate. So our event is co-organized by four units. So this is Department of Political Studies of the Institute of International Studies at Warsaw School of Economics. And the head, the director of our institute is Professor Krzysztof Kozłowski, that at the same time is the vice rector for teaching and students affairs at the Warsaw School of Economics. Our second co-organizer is Center for French Culture and Francophone Studies at the University of Warsaw. And Dr. Laurent Tatarenko is the head of this unit, and also he is today with us. Then it is the Laboratory of Urban and Regional Migration Policies at the Center of Migration Research, University of Warsaw. And there are few colleagues among us from this center, including Professor Maciej Duszczyk, one of our keynote speakers, Aneta Krzywożeka-Jelinowska, and myself. And then obviously, Union of Polish Metropolises, and today Managing Director of the Union of Polish Metropolises is also with us. And I would like to stress that very often all of these partners cooperate while organizing different events regarding the migration situation and migration policies in Poland and Polish cities. So this is not the very first event we do together. And now, in fact, I would like to give the floor to our guests that will officially open the event. So my role is more technical. So let's start with Professor Krzysztof Kozłowski, as you already know, Vice Rector for Teaching and Students Affairs, Warsaw School of Economics.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope this works. First and foremost, thank you, Marta. Actually, we all know her. She always underappreciates herself. I believe without her, it wouldn't be possible to organize any sort of event concerning migration at Warsaw School of Economics. Marta, thank you very much for this. You are not just the technical spirits, but the spiritus movens of migration studies at Warsaw School of Economics. Ladies and gentlemen, first and foremost, welcome to Warsaw School of Economics. It's a great pleasure to welcome you on behalf also of my great friend, Professor Małgorzata Mendes-Dziech, who unfortunately is sick today and unable to attend. I hope she will be able to join us online. I would like to thank all the partners for cooperation. I believe it's not just a cooperation, but friendship based on what Marta and Professor Małgorzata is delivering. Thank you very much for the Center for French Studies. Thank you very much to the Union. Thank you very much to the Warsaw University, my alma mater, for actually, I have to confess, this is my weak spot. Warsaw University is my weak spot. I need to confess that. And as far as migrations are concerned, I believe we are more interested in merits, so I'll not prolong. And I believe it's great time to give floor to our guests. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Krzysztof, for being with us and for these nice introductory words also concerning my person. But anyway, it would not be possible having a boss like you at this university. So as Krzysztof said, Professor Małgorzata Mendes-Dziech is not with us, but obviously she will follow us online, or at least after the event she will see the recording. And now I would like to give the floor to Dr. Laurent Tatarenko, our second main co-organizer of today's event. So Laurent, the floor is yours.
I hope, I think, yes. So, dear rector, dear professors and colleagues, dear students, beginning this brief speech, I would like to say first of all that I am very glad to come back to Warsaw School of Economics, which recently has become a particularly active partner for the Center for French Culture and Francophone Studies of the University of Warsaw. We already had the opportunity to organize several academic events with, I believe, a certain success. And I think we will continue in this way. So the conference we are opening today is therefore a testament to the genuine academic friendship I use all also the term that Dr. Kozlowski already mentioned, friendship between our two institutions, which is set to grow in the future. However, over and above these good relations, which are largely due to the dynamism of Professor Małgorzata Molendez-Dierck, who unfortunately isn't with us today, but maybe, as once again Rector Kozlowski said, I hope she will attend the event online. So I could also emphasize the scientific value of these contacts between the Warsaw School of Economics and our Center for French Culture, and to underline that they have led to excellent exchanges and stimulated reflection on major issues such as the one we are discussing today. Over the months of war, the migration of Ukrainians, driven out by a massive military confrontation with Russia, has become an omnipresent theme in the politics of most of the countries of Central Europe, but also in the agendas of civil society, which often take frontline action in the face of these new and constantly changing challenges. Although initially the reception of the refugees was a humanitarian issue, more complex social and legislative questions soon arose concerning the integration of these individuals and these families into the socio-professional network of the places they had taken them in. Of course, these issues are not unique to the Ukrainians, but the massive nature of this wave of migrants has obviously given a new acuity to the more traditional problems of receiving refugees and has led to redefine local public policies in order to find a solution to the demands of these populations. The issues raised behind this phenomena that will be discussed today actually relates, I think, to the very functioning of contemporary institutions and societies examining the tools and the ways in which they are able to integrate exogenous populations. On this point, however, it is interesting to note that this context, Poland in the first instance, but also other countries in the regions, are experiencing a kind of, let's say, cross-border migration that has become a dynamic back-and-forth movement, taking on some characteristics of population flow between Ukraine and Poland already in place before February 2022. In other words, Central Europe has become not only an asylum according to the traditional wartime migration patterns, but also a sort of rear base for the Ukrainian war effort, obviously through the material help provided, but also becoming a sort of hub for Ukrainian migrants. Another important element of our meeting is the choice to adopt a comparative approach between institutions, but also between territories, as this highlights also all the more the role of local players in phenomena that unfold on different scales and which will be presented today. Finally, I would also like to emphasize all the interests that a Franco-Polish institution such as our center has for this kind of meeting, because after, let's say, some hesitation and mutual misunderstanding, France is now seeking to develop new expertise and a new perspective on the whole region, which will take into account geopolitical reconfiguration of this area. So at our modest level, we are trying to be one of the elements in this redeployment, which will ultimately redefine the future policies for this part of Europe and, as I hope, a new way to build a dialogue between different actors of the European Union. For all these reasons, I would like to warmly thank once again all those who were the architects of these meetings, namely Dr. Marta Pachowska, Aneta Krzywożejka-Jelinowska, Dr. Jan Miszuna, and of course, once again, Professor Małgorzata Molendez-Dierck. And I'm also grateful to all the partners who have kindly associated themselves with this project, the Waldorf School of Economics, which welcomes us within its walls, but also the Center of Migration Research of the University of Warsaw, and finally the Foundation Unia Metropolii Polskich. It only remains, I think, for me to wish you an excellent discussion and to hand over to Aneta Krzywożejka-Jelińska, will be our guide for the first part of the event.
Thank you, Laurent. Thank you for being with us today. Thanks. My name is Aneta Krzywożyk-Kalinowska. I'm an associate researcher in the Center for French Culture and Francophone Studies. Unfortunately, our first scheduled guest, Professor Katrin Witold-Wenden, won't be able to attend due to an unexpected event, but she promised us to do another webinar with her. So the first panel will consist of three presentations instead of four. For this reason, each presentation could last about 20 minutes. In this panel, we will welcome the following experts, Professor Maciej Duszczyk, Professor Patrice McCann, Professor Galia Chimiak, and PhD Marie Jelinkova. Please, Professor Maciej Duszczyk, welcome here.
We would like to invite us to the best session here. So, Patrice and Galia, can you please join us here? Because Marie is with us online. Professor, you will do the first. Please use microphones, because thanks to microphones, we can...
Okay. Professor Maciej Duszczyk, I invite you to take your place for...
Sorry for my voice. So, like, apologizing regarding the result of the Sunday's march against the oppositional group, breaking the rule of law in Poland, and we shouldn't forget anything about the universities, and when we should deal with research questions, we shouldn't forget about the most important issues which are facing now in Poland. During my very short speech, I think that I would like to focus on a few points that we currently facing in Poland, but however, let me start with present some very current statistics. And if we take to account the number of Ukrainians in Poland, we like to estimate that now we have no more than 2 million, and half of them came to Poland before outbreak of the full-scale war against Ukraine. It means we can call them as the typical labor migrants. And more than 80% of them decided to stay in Poland, not come back to Ukraine or move to another countries. It means that we can estimate this to be around 1 million. The next 1 million, of course, are the people who came to Poland after outbreak of the full-scale war on 24th of 2022. But you know it, I think so, quite well, that we have the problem how we can call them. Because, of course, they came in the war. It means that they had a lot of rights to be recognized as a refugee. But, of course, from the different reasons, it wouldn't be possible to grant for all of them the refugee status. This is the question, of course, if all of them want to be refugees. That's why the European Union follow also the Polish government push on that, decided to give them temporary protection, which is the special unique rights for people who fleeing the war. And this temporary protection expanded until the end of October this year. But We are quite sure that also it will be the second expand of this temporary protection until the end of February next year. Of course, the most important question is what would happen after the temporary arrest protection will be finished. If all of the people will be given a special residence permit or temporary residence permit, not all, or permanent residence permit. This is the still open question. But if we take into account the reception, the period of reception, I can say this, this phase has gone without major problems. Because, for example, I will speak on this issue later on, but for example, we avoided what we very deeply afraid in the past. We avoided this problem of homeless or refugees from Ukraine. Even if the situation in housing Poland is very difficult, still it was very information that we avoided problem of homeless of people. But as now we are in the second phase of integration of people, especially war refugees. This is the phase of inclusion of refugees into the Polish society. And this phase is absolutely critical. It's absolutely critical good integration of these people into the Polish society. But if we take into account, let me come back to the statistics, and now we are observing the process of outflow of Ukrainians from Poland, not exactly to Ukraine, but to another European Union countries, or Canada or the United States. As you probably know, Canada decided to establish very intensive recruitment policy, especially targeted to the well-educated Ukrainians, for example, who live in Poland or Germany. It is the more than 50,000 free places for Ukrainians, for well-educated Ukrainians, especially with families. That's why we can be sure that more and more people, well-educated people, who don't want to come back to Ukraine, decide to try to find a better place to live until the end of their life, especially for their children. And Canada is still a very nice option for them. And if we take into account the situation from the economic point of view, the only, I can say, most important benefit for Ukrainians 500 plus. And now we estimate that 500 plus is received by approximately 400,000 Ukrainian children. And the cost to the budget is approximately 200 million Polish zloty per month. But at the same time, of course, Ukrainians who are employed in Polish labor market pay taxes and insurance and social contributions. And it means that at the present, I can say that we estimate that from the point of view of Polish state budget, the Polish state budget benefits from the presence of Ukrainians in Poland. Of course, I don't want to speak about, for example, expenditure from the international organization, which are addressed directly to the war refugees, but this is information only for inflow and outflow money from the budget. And in the second phase of integration, means inclusion of Ukrainians into the Polish societies. We think that we will face three most important challenges in the future. One of them is absolutely crucial. It is the education option. Because still we have more than 150,000 patients who are outside of our Polish system. And all of them should follow Ukrainian curriculum and to be to be present in the Ukrainian school system, even if they are in Poland. And still it's possible to follow the relevant Ukrainian school. But to be honest, we don't know. And if children from Ukraine follow Ukrainian curriculum or not, because we don't have any data on such situation, and it is the most important challenge for us. What is for us also very important to monitor, to observe, that the number of Ukrainian children in Polish schools decreased in the last months, at least decreased in the last months, have increased in the last month. This is the still problem, because more and more children are outside the Polish school system, and it means that more and more children more children are in the risk of exclusion, not only from the education system, but also from the society. That's why if you want to avoid a lot of different problems in the future, also the labor market, we should do immediately to address this challenge. The second challenge is healthcare. Usually people who immigrate to a country are in a better health condition than the post society. Because this is mostly the same. Young people, they go to as the labor migrants. That's why their health condition is better than the post society. Because they are mainly between 25 and 45 years old. It means they are in a much more better condition than the post society. But unfortunately, I don't know if it's unfortunately, but it's the fact, in the case of refugees, the situation is the opposite. Due to the fact that among the war refugees, there are approximately 15% of people over the age of 55, this means that their health status, this health condition is not the best. It's only in Poland that they are diagnosed and treatment begins. It has to be assumed that with an increasing number of diseases being diagnosed, the cost of care and its availability will be a challenge for the Polish healthcare system. Still, we have something that's what we can call social responsibility of entrepreneurs, because, for example, such very huge companies like the Luxembourg and Medicover still have special programs for refugees. But I'm not sure, but without exit strategy, this program will be closed until the end of this year. It means I will speak with them. I will say a few words, as I will finish my presentation. But still, in the next years, it might be very huge additional challenge for the Polish healthcare system. Which has been very hardly touched, hit by the COVID pandemic. And the last issue is housing. According to the estimates by Amnesty International, some 200,000 apartments may currently be rented by Ukrainian refugees and refugee women on the market basis, mainly in large cities. Mainly the large cities, of course, Warsaw, Wrocław, Poznań, Łódź, Gdańsk, and Sosnow. Those who have been in Poland for a long time and have the right of permanent residence have also acquired housing often on credit. There are currently some tens of thousands of people in collective accommodation centers. They are already partially covering the cost of their stay, but the number of Ukrainians who are in temporary stay centers has been increased very fast during the last weeks, because if they have to pay for their stay in this, to be honest, not very well equipped stay center, they decided to rent apartments on their own. And however, a large proportion of Ukrainians are living in a substandard conditions housing. This has a negative impact on their ability to participate in the society. Housing overcrowding also causes tensions and conflicts within families and between residents. That means we have to be prepared also for more and more different problems within the families, who stay in Poland. And the last topic I would like to address concerns the condition of NGOs. I have already spoken about healthcare system and special programs from the Polish private medical entrepreneurs, but we have also to be sure, and because we are sure that in the next months, more and more international organizations again, question with exit strategy or without exit strategy, will leave Poland to move to Ukraine or to come back to, say, a country, typical country like the African country, or for example, go to Sudan or another places where also that's also facing now with the problem of refugees. This is the question about the condition of NGOs. They are the ones who took on the responsibility of setting up the aid system during the influx of refugees. Their budgets and staffing levels have increased more than a dozenfold in the just 1 year. I wrote a short paper to the Forced Migration Review, and I have asked most important NGOs in Poland. And for example, in the, the largest Polish NGO, which dealt with migration issues, in the 2021, the budget penetration was 1 million zloty, 1 million, 2021. In 2022, 30 million. And in employment in this organization, in 2021, 8%. In 2022, 150. It means it is the most huge challenge how to survive with so many different duties, but also how to manage such organization. And of course, they have secured funding for the current year, but unfortunately, no one can say what will happen in the following years. I feel that the potential may be wasted. It is, of course, a huge challenge for the budget, finance, also the activity of NGOs during the not only recession phase of management of refugees, but also during the inclusion and especially during the integration phase of welcoming refugees in country, in receiving country. Maybe I stop now, and then of course if you have any additional questions, I will be happy to respond. Any questions? Usually, when you want to participate in the conference, she has a lot of different, very difficult questions.
But you know the answer.
Let me check this. Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Professor, for giving us this current perspective on forced migration from Ukraine in Poland and underlying the challenges needed to face by Poland, Polish government, Polish society, and local NGOs. Professor and our guests, please forgive me. I'm being a little bit stressed and I didn't present you to our audience. To correct this, I'm going to do this anyway. The first speaker was Professor Maciej Duszczyk. Professor is a political scientist, specializes in the area of integration, migration policies, and social policy. He's a professor at the Faculty of Political Science and International Studies of Warsaw University. He's also a multiple expert involved in the development of Polish migration policy. Thank you. The next presentation will be provided by Professor Patrice McMacken and Galia Chimiak. Professor Patrice McMacken is the Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Her researchers are focused on humanitarian issues, peace building, civil society activism, and US foreign policy. She is currently a fellow of the Fulbright program in Poland. And Professor Galia Chimiak is an associate professor in sociology at the Civil Society Department of the Institute of Philosophy and Sociology in the Polish Academy of Science in Warsaw. She is interested in societal self-organization and international development cooperation. Please.
Great, thank you. And then just that's okay. Great, thank you so much.
Yeah, because they can do it now, so okay. May I?
Sure.
Let's introduce the presentation.
Great, thank you. Thank you for this invitation and thank you for the opportunity for us to talk about our research. I'll start off our presentation and then Galia will finish up and provide some take-home points and I suspect some areas for future research. So when we think about Ukrainian migration to Poland, we think about Polish civil society, we think about Polish citizens, and we also think about how generous and inspiring the actions were in the past year and a half. In fact, UN officials quite regularly use the word generous and inspiring in talking about Poland's reception and integration of migrants. Thanks to the Polish people and the efforts of Polish civil society that was talked about in the previous presentation, Mark Brzezinski, the US ambassador to Poland, argues that Poland has now earned the title of humanitarian superpower. Key to our research is this term grassroots humanitarianism, and we argue that ordinary citizens, non-governmental organizations, as well as informal citizens initiatives are really crucial for understanding what's happened in Poland in terms, again, both of the reception and the integration of Ukrainians, how the activities unfolded, and really what's happening today. So our presentation and what we'll talk about today is really about social efforts, citizen efforts, and non-governmental organizations. So for us, what's really interesting and important from the perspective of humanitarian studies are these novel forms of cooperation, which we argue cut across previous divides. And we call these novel forms of cooperation ad hoc needs-based partnerships, or ANPs. And what we argue are these ANPs, which are ongoing today and have both been involved, again, with the reception of Ukrainians and with the integration of Ukrainians, have been effective and that they're an important in the evolution of humanitarian assistance. So what does the aid look like and what does the support look like? The aid and support, as I mentioned before, has been immediate, generous, inspiring. But what we also want to point out about these ad hoc needs-based partnerships and what civil society has been doing in Poland has really gone beyond the traditional definition of humanitarian assistance. So the assistance has been in-kind, volunteering, finances, as well as crowdfunding for materials related to the military. So the assistance that we're looking at often goes beyond this traditional notion and the traditional definition of humanitarian assistance. Thanks. These are three of our research questions. So what we're really interested in looking at are what are the characteristics of the humanitarian responses. And we also, the more we got involved in our research, the more we were interested in these distinctions that we argue now are artificial about what is an international organization, what's a national organization, what's a local organization. What we have found are the organizations work at different levels and interact with different audiences, sometimes simultaneously. And that's really important to understand in terms of these ad hoc needs-based partnerships. And we're also interested in understanding the dynamic of these ad hoc needs-based partnerships and what are the impact of these citizen initiatives on Ukrainians, but also on Polish civil society and the effect that it's had. And again, this was mentioned in the previous presentation, the effect that it's had on non-governmental organizations and their budgets, but also integration efforts in schools and in communities. So I just wanted to provide a little bit of context and where we're coming from in terms of the context of humanitarian studies. A couple of years ago, I finished a book that was on the Balkans, and I'm just summarizing a whole book, but the global humanitarian context was what we were thinking of when we started our research to see how similar or different the Balkans, for example, was to what's been going on in Poland. And Galia has also lived and worked in the Balkans, and that was another thing that brought our research together. So we kept wondering, are things that have been happening in Poland in the last year and a half, are they similar or are they different from what happened in the Balkans? So let me summarize a very long book into 3 points. So the global humanitarian context often is very, very different from what has happened in Poland in the last year and a half. So the international actors in the case of the Balkans descended en masse, hundreds, if not thousands, of international actors, multilateral agencies, international non-governmental organizations descended on the Balkans, both Bosnia and Kosovo, to do good. And they were the primary actors, really driving the agenda, often leading, setting the agenda for what happened in terms of humanitarian assistance. What we also learned in terms of these international actors as kind of the primary agents driving and governing humanitarian assistance is that often the activities were based on international needs or what international actors thought was important in Bosnia or what they thought was important in Kosovo. In fact, one of my chapters is called Copy, Paste, and Delete, because people in Kosovo had told me that several of the proposals or things that they received from international organizations, they could tell clearly were proposals or ideas and activities from other countries in Africa or Southeast Asia, and they just copied, pasted, and deleted those names of those countries and then started those kind of projects in Kosovo. The final dynamic that I talk about in my book, and again, these were the dynamics and the things that we were thinking about in our research, is that international actors, that there's this strange dynamic occurred, a dysfunctional dynamic occurred with international actors who needed to demonstrate to their constituencies, whether it was in Brussels or in Washington or in London, that they were doing good and that they had a presence. And as a result of this kind of need for them to demonstrate their importance and presence, it created an unequal and what I argue an unfortunate dynamic between international actors and local actors. And this is the quote where the title of the book came from. And this is a quote from one of the interlocutors that I met with several times in Sarajevo when he was talking about kind of this dynamic between international actors that can arrive en masse, really often without any language skills, context, knowledge of the situation. He argued that we, the locals, waste the Westerners' money, and they, the internationals, waste our time. So this was the dynamic in previous international situations. And as all of you know, Bosnia and Kosovo was a very different situation, but it was the last big migration crisis in Europe. So a lot of the international actors that are involved today in Poland were also involved in the Balkans. So we were interested in seeing how this humanitarian club, this is not my term, this came from an article by Walker and Barnett, I think from 2019. So how has this humanitarian club interacted and operated in Poland in the current situation? So we argue the Polish case is quite different from the Balkans and quite different from other humanitarian crises. Local actors in Poland, and we mean both governmental actors and non-governmental actors and social actors, but both have been leading and driving the humanitarian responses, both reception and integration. And these actors, we are looking again at social actors and civil society. What we argue is these actors possess moral authority and have unique expertise in the situation. The reception and integration, remains quite spontaneous and ad hoc, provided by individuals and informal initiatives. And this is a statistic from just March to May in terms of how many Polish citizens, ordinary people, who were involved in receiving, helping, and supporting Ukrainian migrants in the past year, or just from March to May, 70% providing some kind of assistance, with 10%, again, these are just estimates, from the National Economic Institute, of how many Poles hosted Ukrainians in their home. We argue that these Polish actors, they behave differently than actors have in the past. And these partnerships, we argue, have been very distinctive and very effective in terms of meeting the needs of Ukrainians in an ad hoc way. But what we're seeing now are continuous responses and continuous activities around integration. We can talk about some of the problems and challenges, because there certainly are. We also look at some of these ad hoc needs-based partnerships that occurred online, because there have been plenty of organizations that have operated entirely online using Facebook or some other platform to provide transportation, assistance, and support for Ukrainians. This is one organization that some of you may be familiar with, Kobiety za Koło, that is an organization started by women for women and provides safe transportation for women from the border to places in Poland as well as elsewhere. So this has been one of many online initiatives that we look at in our research. Many of the international actors that were involved in other cases certainly have been involved in Poland, many of the traditional international actors. But what we have heard from international actors is that they are now working mostly in partnership with Polish organizations or with indigenous organizations here, providing funding, but really playing the role of kind of secondary and not the primary organization in this situation. So this is an observation from an official from an international NGO, and I see someone laughing. So some international NGOs that arrived in Poland, frankly, were surprised. UN officials came here thinking there would be camps or people on the streets. And as we all know, there were no camps or people on the streets. Poland handled the crisis efficiently, and I think really surprised the international NGOs. And I've interviewed several people from consulates here in Warsaw and from international NGOs, and they're, you know, really been impressed with what the Polish society has been able to do and wants to work in partnership, appreciates the expertise that Poles have. And so I think just important for to remember that some of these international NGOs have had a different experience in other post-conflict or in other humanitarian situations. So I'm just going to go over briefly the four reasons why we think these ad hoc needs-based partnerships have been effective, unique, and really important. First, of course, it's the experience. And some of you know that Polish humanitarian organizations like Polska Akcja Humanitarna has been around since the 1990s. It got its start in the 1990s after the crisis in the Balkans. So one thing that distinguishes these organizations is they have experience. They also have expertise. Many of these organizations and informal citizens initiatives, I met with a woman in Krakow who's been working in Ukraine for 15 years. I met with a woman from Gliwice who's been working in Ukraine for about 20 years. So these are not people who have just figured out where Ukraine is on the map. And I'm saying that in contrast to some other organizations or people that showed up at the Polish border. So these are people and organizations that have a lot of experience with Ukrainian, speak Ukrainian, and have ongoing partnerships with Ukrainian organizations. A third reason that Polish organizations and Polish civil society has been so effective is the breadth of Polish NGO sector. So it's not only organizations that have humanitarian experience and expertise in Ukraine, but there's also a wide breadth of organizations doing a lot of different things in Polish civil society. So this is just a picture of one of the biggest humanitarian organizations and a really important and effective Polish humanitarian organization that's been working both in Ukraine and in Poland with Ukrainian migrants. in terms of expertise, there's also organizations like Grupa Granica that has been working with other migrant groups. So Poland has definitely been different from other countries in Europe in terms of their experience with migrants or with refugees. But there certainly are some organizations that have experience working with migrants and lots of individuals who have been working on migration research for a while. Just a final organization in terms of the breadth of organizations that have been thinking about Polish civil society, thinking about multiculturalism in Poland, thinking about integration in Poland for a long time. And this recent activities with Ukraine have just allowed them to extend and provide more depth for some of their activities. Final reason is we argue that they've been a catalyst. These ad hoc needs-based partnerships have been a catalyst for organizations without any experience with humanitarian relief or any experience with migrants or refugees. It's provided them with an opportunity to think differently about their own organizations and to further their own civil society goals or interests, and to use this opportunity in the past year and a half to broaden what they're doing and the kinds of activities. We have two quotes from different organizations that work with migrants in Poland. And the second quote is from a woman who is involved with a women's organization. So this recent events have allowed women's organizations to think differently about who their target audience is, where they can get funding for different activities, but it allows them to promote their own goals in a different way and providing some assistance also for Ukrainian women. This humanitarian uprising, and I appreciate this term that we received just from a workshop that we did recently. Someone called what happened in Poland a humanitarian uprising. It has meant that Poland is now ground zero for a lot of multilateral partnerships with local regional groups, with a lot of international organizations that are interested in establishing a presence in Poland, but are working very closely with Polish NGOs. And also realizing that Polish NGOs have a lot of experience and expertise that they don't have. That's my time, so thank you.
Presentation that so far is shown this year. We conclude that the new configuration of actors suggests new and promising directions in humanitarian action. However, at the same time, we are not turning a blind eye to some troubling dynamics that also exist and that require ongoing attention and research. On the one hand, we conclude that grassroots citizens' initiatives and ad hoc needs-based partnerships can have led and can lead humanitarian crisis. Local social actors are necessary, and we appreciate that they have stepped in during, especially the first period of the crisis. However, their participation is not sufficient for long-term solution. On the one hand, aid fatigue is real, and we are observing it. Also, Ukrainian partners have been advocating for an activist tradition of resistance humanitarianism, meaning drawing neutrality in favor of solidarity with those on the front line too. And surely we do need governments for long-term support, not rely only on local actors. The global humanitarian system is changing with the good, though this is a little. Local actors have been the first to step in and they have been effective. Internationals acknowledge that they do not have the capacity and they rely on locals on our capacity. Reports, however, indicate that international government organizations not giving money to locals, not giving sufficient funds to locals, and that therefore localization efforts have been largely stalled. These grassroots efforts might and and we'll say do impact poor society as well. Exogenous crises like the current one can indeed transform societies. Perhaps we could argue that in a contemporary polarized foreign society, support for Ukraine is perhaps the only common that some of the more polarized groups within foreign society have in common. Some of the ad hoc need-based partnerships we analyze were to finish issues and problems and also help Ukrainians. We argue that future research should analyze the effectiveness of these programs and their strategies. And last but not least, there is a need for new thinking and new concepts. Responses, humanitarian responses, are defined previous concepts and divides, particularly notions of Western Third World, or as we would say more recently, global north towards global south divides. Previously, even still recently, we are more used to thinking in terms of international, meaning Western, liberal, wealthy, progressive, and local, Eastern or Southern, least developed or underdeveloped, passive or weak. However, we will take the current crisis as an opportunity to revisit those divides while remaining vigilant of the growing influence and presence of pseudo religious extreme founders seeking to undermine human rights. And those founders actually come from countries like from European countries, from the United States, but also from Russia. This is to say also another argument that international Western does not necessarily mean progressive, and should also be aware about those changing. Also, when we criticize communitarian support that is coming from progressive NGOs. Ongoing activities in Poland demonstrate that actors from outside the region, the global north, need to keep their promises and make localization of humanitarian action not just a slogan but a practice. And another important argument, because that's an argument from a Ukrainian academic who talks about epistemic imperialism, meaning that Ukraine has been doubly characterized, if I can say so, on the one hand by Russia, on the other hand by the West. And therefore, it is crucial to that ongoing research to avoid those epistemic imperialisms in plural and continue to incorporate the first-hand accounts of Ukrainian scholars, of activists from Ukraine, as well as Poland and those from outside the region.
Thank you very much. Thank you for underlining the importance of the engagement of civil society and local NGOs. Personally, it's a very important topic for me because I was a professional working last year in local NGO. Thank you very much again. Our morning panel will be concluded by PhD Marii Jelinkova. She lectures at the Department of Public and Social Policy at the Faculty of Social Science at the Charles University. Marii Jelinkova focuses mainly on the situation of migrants in the Czech Republic and on the topic of local integration of migrants, especially in the terms of multi-level governance and implementation. Marii, can you hear us?
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for the invitation and sorry for not being able to be physically present in Warsaw. And in my presentation, I would like to share the experiences and the responses of the Czech Republic. And thank you for both presentations. I can really see in both of them striking similarities. So let me share my PowerPoint presentation with you. Wow. Second. Yeah, somehow. Okay, so I will use the PDF. Can you see it now? Can you see my presentation?
Yes, we can. We can see.
Thank you. So I call it opportunities taken and lost because I understand the situation when such a huge numbers of Ukrainians came to the Czech Republic on one hand, of course, as a possibility to show also what the country can offer and how it can act positively towards migrants. But I see it as an opportunity for the Czech Republic to open more and accept also some structural measures which are, from my perspective, needed to become more open and more inclusive society. So let me start with some facts and figures. The Czech Republic has population over 10 million inhabitants, so it's almost four times less than Poland, and we accepted over 500,000 of Ukrainian refugees, and most of them stayed in the Czech Republic. So we have got almost 400,000 of those who remained on our territory. And Ukrainians were also the largest migrant group before the war even started. So we have received the highest number of Ukrainian refugees per 100,000 inhabitants. The response, similarly to Poland, was very quick. Of course, the civil society reacted, I would say, even overnight, but also the state's assistance was quick and I would say very inclusive and effective. Pardon me? So I think that we accepted very similar measures to what Poland accepted. The Czech Republic offered the temporary protection to all Ukrainians who came after February 24th. They received access to public health insurance, so they now have the health insurance free for the first 150 days. But most of the vulnerable population, including elderly and children, remain to have the healthcare free for the whole time they are here. They have free access to labor market. There is a compulsory schooling for Ukrainian children aged 6 to 15, and they receive quite significant humanitarian assistance, meaning mainly social benefits. The Czech Republic consists of 14 regions, and in each region there is a one-stop shop where all Ukrainians who came can come and get their residence, health insurance. In the past, they could also receive the accommodation and they could get registered in the employment office. What was quite unique in the Czech reality was that the academic sphere were able to conduct quite a large-scale study during the first months when the Ukrainians came, and the study also included recommendations what should the Czech state do in the future when it comes to Ukrainian integration, and the Czech government adopted most of these recommendations. So that's the positive part, and of course the story goes on, and it's always good to have nice visions and strategies, but sometimes it may be challenging to implement them. So the Czech Republic came with the first national concept on migrant integration in 2000, and there were several updates, but the last major one is from 2016. And instead of including the Ukrainians under this concept, the Czech government decided to come up with a new strategy for the integration of Ukrainians. So now it's there are two parallel concepts which do not communicate with each other much. And of course, both of them have similar issue related to, you know, really implementing the suggested measures. What are the main pressing issues nowadays? Of course, the housing, the capacity of preschool, long-term healthcare, and the most of the Ukrainians were able to participate in the Czech labor market, but they do not, they work under their qualification, so they do not access high-skill jobs. And when we look it from more different perspective, we could see that migration worked as a litmus test of the society. By that I mean that it made this some stress of difficult situation make it more visible the what are the weaker points of how the Czech society and state works. We could also see that some the concept of past dependency works really well in this case, because if there were some sectoral policies, and they were, that took migrants into account before 2002, so usually these sectoral policies reacted very efficiently and well. The example could be, for example, special programs in schools, how to teach the Czech language as a secondary language, and how to include migrants in the educational system, because the Czech Republic accepted a completely new scheme for that in 2021. So when the system was at least partly prepared, then the reaction was much better later on. So let's have a quickly look at the Czech regions. The regions played the key role in the beginning, because it was the regional governments who organized the one-stop shops or were responsible for that. But when the increase of Ukrainian migrants slowed down, the regions didn't feel very often much responsible for the situation of Ukrainians. So they were really able to well when there were some acute emergent needs, but then they were offered to have like an expert on the migrants, on the Ukrainians integration, which would be paid for 2 years by UNHCR, but half of the regions decided not to accept this offer, because the reasons were very different. Sometimes they said, well, we don't see much issues, but you know what this person would do. So usually those regions really didn't pay much attention. Sometimes they said, well, there is the, you know, very active civil society, so we don't need anybody. And sometimes they also said that they are centers for support of integration of foreigners in each centers. These centers are run by the Ministry of Interior in most cases, and they said, well, we have these centers and we do not need you know, anything else. But actually these centers have more like a service role, and they are not related to regional policies. When we look at the situation of municipalities, the large cities like Prague and Brno had quite developed integration policies before the Ukrainians came, but the small municipalities usually omitted the situation of migrants, and they didn't feel the ownership for this agenda. What also plays an important role, that I would say that Czechs tend to accept the neoliberal doctrine. By that, I mean that people, you know, often say that, you know, the way that people are just responsible for their lives, and that the meritocracy works, and that even though when they do not experience this in their own lives, they still see, well, migrants and all migrants parents are responsible, and it's up to them how they cope in society. So there is not. So in the past there was not a like a societal understanding in the society that some proactive measures should be taken. This has partly changed when the Ukrainians came in large numbers, but I think that these ideological beliefs are still strongly influences the approach of Czech societies to when support or not to support some specific measures taken towards Ukrainians. Also, NGOs were and are or have been extremely important in the Czech context. Migrant NGOs were very strong before 2022, and they even came with some strategical visions what should Czech Republic do. They focused on advocacy, so they commented on every single legislation, including the life of migrants in the Czech Republic, of course, not being successful very often, but still they played an important role. And they also provided a methodological support, so for example, to schools, but also to municipalities. What plays another important role is that the Czech municipalities are very decentralized and fragmented. We have got an extremely high number of small municipalities, and they are very decentralized. So it's mainly up to mayors what the municipality will or will not do. And my almost last slide. And the last year I have conducted together with the Association of Czech Municipalities a questionnaire. We have received answers from usually mostly smaller municipalities, but which hosted over a quarter of Ukrainian refugees. And when we asked them who was, you know, really involved in the beginning, and then later on, they said, well, it was all the assistance relied on voluntary and mostly unpaid work of municipal officials, citizens, and civil society. So these three actors played the most important role. And then what we asked them, what troubles them, what they really would appreciate, they named three areas, all of them with them, they stressed the same. So the first thing what troubles them are finances. The local actors usually know what they would do, but sometimes they struggle to find the finances. Then the housing is an issue. And to our surprise, they openly ask for methodological support. They kind of felt, from my perspective, the first time in the Czech Republic that they really should do something, but they were not sometimes sure which measures or step they should take, especially in the long term. And they also ask for some information support, because the legislation is changing quite a lot, and you know, in each municipality they have to look for this information. So the state nor the region were not able to answer to these needs usually. So there are many bottom-up activities, again mainly by the civil society sector. So there is a consortium of NGOs assisting to migrants, which have a huge information service, which is now used by most of the active municipalities. There is also some methodological support, but its reach is very limited. And when we ask now the municipalities, they kind of, from my perspective, gave up a little bit, gave up from expectations from the regions and from the state. But they said that what they would really appreciate is to be supported in a networking with other municipalities, to see what other municipalities experience. And what has also changed on the local level is that there are many new actors which got involved in the integration activities, especially local community centers. And when I interviewed people working, let us say, in the first line, meaning social workers, NGOs workers, terrain workers, and so on, I can see that they are really exhausted. Some of them even left what they their professions because the burnout after 1 year of activism is an important issue. So the reactions to that are of course diverse. Some municipalities just stopped being involved and they ignore the problems. And in other cases, we can see that the local level created some ad hoc responses, which may or may not be sustainable. So that's all from my short presentation, and I will be glad for your questions and comments.
Thank you, Marie. Thank you for your interesting presentation and bringing closer to us the Czech perspective. It was also very useful to have this possibility to compare our states, Poland and Czech Republic. I invite again our speakers, please. Thank you for you all for this very interesting and critical approach to the subject of our migration. And I invite now to all our audience being here with us and this who are with us online to ask the questions. If there is anybody who would like to ask the question.
Janusz Palicki from Kardynał Stefan Wyszyński University in Warsaw. I would like only to mention that a few days ago in Brussels, there was an interesting meeting. In Brussels, the Commission of the Bishops' Conference of the European Union, Komisja in Polish, and this meeting was connected with the subject, of course, immigrants, refugees from Ukraine, but in aspect of trafficking regarding this labor exploitation and the sex exploitation of women. And in this commission, the Migration Commission, there were people from all European Union countries, and there were three speakers from the European Commission as well. And generally speaking, there was not many evidence of this kind of exploitation, but there were some. And the European Commission ask us to warn our organization in our countries and maybe even these politicians to look on this problem in the singular countries. I look a little bit in Poland and it is the report, but not many information from the border guards, from the prosecutors, but there are as well the materials which are showing that sometimes it happened that special boats situation, the labor exploitation and the sex exploitation. This everything what I wanted to say and ask the question, how is in other countries, for example, in Czech Republic?
So if I may, of course, we are aware of this issue as well. There is a special group from under the Ministry of Interior dealing and the Ministry of Social Affairs dealing with this topic. The group cannot solve the problem as such, because we see that the Ukraine go really to 3D jobs, and when you work in precarious jobs, and especially when you are a female, the risk of labor exploitation and possibly also labor trafficking is a great one. So We know about some cases, but actually what we know even more is that somehow we are not able to, let us say, uncover that we know about the top of the iceberg and not about the scale of the problem as such. So, there is an attention paid to that topic, but I think that the openness of societies to tolerate precarious work also leads to the fact that these issues will be very much present.
Thank you, Marie. If any one of our speakers would like to.
Very briefly, I think that in one of the first my interview just after outbreak of the full-scale war, I gave this advice that we have to very immediately try to involve also Europol to avoid this trafficking problem with especially female who came with children. And it was the positive response, not only from the Polish police, but also from the Europol. And this process was stopped. But we observed in the first day of just after outbreak of the full-scale war, let's see, for example, the different criminal groups came from each other from Netherlands to Poland to try to recruit women to the sex business, especially in Amsterdam, for example. But fortunately, of course, it is quite impossible to avoid such phenomenon during the so huge inflow of people, especially young, attractive female. But fortunately, we avoided huge problem. And I don't want to say that we avoided this problem 100%, of course not. But fortunately, it was not the huge challenge we face it in that time. But of course, this is another issue. Maybe this is not sex exploitation, but Marie said, this is the work exploitation, of course. That's why this is, for example, idea, what also advise the Polish government to support, to strengthen the role of the Polish Labor Inspectorate, to have the special department, how to avoid this exploitation of refugees, especially female, on the Polish labor market. Thank you.
Thank you. Patrice, please.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad that you brought up this issue because I think that it's really important that we do research on what went right as well as what went wrong. And this is one issue that I've heard stories that have been hard to corroborate in terms of, you know, women and trafficking, but I think this is one area that has been a bright spot in terms of what has happened here in Poland. And when you brought this up, I immediately wrote down five different organizations that I either know of or I've interviewed that were thinking exactly about this issue when the crisis started. And having spent about 10 years in the Balkans, I have to say this was the first thing I thought about when the full-scale war started, is what is going to happen with women and trafficking. And I know, again, this has been part of the past year and a half has been about women's activism, women organizing for women, about women, to provide them with safety. So I think this is one area that really deserves more future research.
Yes, and I would just likely, I would like to briefly bring up another issue. I do agree that women are especially vulnerable refugees. And in the context of Poland, I think it is important to mention that, well, on the one hand, what the issue we're talking about here is organized by illegal or mafia actors. However, another vulnerable type of refugees, of female refugees, were survivors of rape during war in Ukraine. And we do know that when they came to Poland and they wanted to terminate this apparently unwanted pregnancy, they were flabbergasted to find out this is not possible. And it is where Polish NGOs that are supporting women stepped in. And I think that is it's a different situation because here we're not talking about the mafia, but we are talking about restrictive law that I'm aware that the intention was not to harm war refugees, like women survivors of rape. However, unintended consequences of laws have also also need to be foreseen by those that create those laws. Thank you.
Thank you very much. We have another question from our guest being online to all speakers. Do you think that the migration policy that based on the spontaneous reaction of friendly society to refugees can be an effective way of dealing with problems of immigrants also in the future? If not, what are your policy recommendations? This, who would like to be first to answer to this question? Thank you.
Migration policy. It's Pavel asking. Yeah. For the next 2 hours of discussion. Of course, we need a comprehensive migration policy, but still this is the question about our capacity to integrate the immigrants, because this is the question about how many immigrants we can invite and welcome in Poland, but this is the question about the capacity of integration then. And now, to be honest, I was asked 2-3 days ago by the journalists, what is the Polish capacity, how many of, for example, labor migrants we can invite to fulfill the shortages on the Polish labor market. My response is no one, because we are full. In the current period of time, we are full. That's why it is not possible to invite more and more migrants, because we have to avoid a lot of different mistakes which have been done by the West countries. That's why this is the question about the integration, about the inclusion of them in the Polish society. Of course, it was not the problem to welcome 800,000, 1 million of war refugees from Ukraine, because it was this unique time in our history. But for example, if we will face to relocate few hundred of citizens of Ghana, for example, or Senegal to Poland, the challenge will be different. But also, I think so, the skepticism of the Polish society will be much more higher. That's why I think so, my advice about the migration policy is to be responsible. Because to be responsible, because it's the question about also the cohesion of Polish society. We should avoid in the next 4 months discussion about the migration during the election campaign. Because if this issue will come back to our discussion, it will be next point to divide Polish society. Of course, Lukashenko and Putin know it quite well. That's why they will push on the Polish border. And it is absolutely necessary to be responsible, not only from the non-NGOs, but also from the government, not to try to use this issue, during the election campaign and divide the society. I think so. And now we need really responsible migration policy, but mainly based on our integration potential, integration capacity of Polish society, but also Polish government, Polish economy, Polish labor market, Polish healthcare sector, education, and so on. And maybe last sentence. I can say, I'm sure that you know quite well, that Poland shifted from the typical immigration country into immigration one only during the 4 or 5 years. It must be a challenge for our society. And now we don't see it very visible. It is not very visible challenge, but it came. It came. That's why we have to be really responsible how many of people we would like to still invite to Poland. And my advice is to focus on integration. Thank you.
Thank you very much. If anybody would like to also. Yes.
Patricia, I just want to say that coming from a country that right now does not have a stellar migration policy and have our own crises that are looming at our own borders and we haven't faced them, this global migration crisis is so real, with 100 million people on the move who are forcibly moved from their homes, with an estimated 300 million people on the move for other reasons, for economic reasons, environmental reasons. This is an issue that all countries really need to start talking about in a serious way. And I guess the question was, can social organizations and ad hoc spontaneous actions solve the problem? Absolutely no. What's happened here is unusual, it's remarkable, but it's certainly not sustainable. And I doubt there are many other countries that are going to be in the position that Poland was in last February, just because the circumstances were so unusual. But for me, this is a big crisis that no one seems to be really facing head on.
Thank you, Patricia. Marie, would you like to add
I
something?
Think that definitely that cannot be sustainable, but we know that the response of local level is very effective. So from my perspective, and that's also why I focus in my research now on the local level, is that we need to find ways how to support the capacity of the local level to, you know, include migrants and deal with migrants. And actually the funding doesn't need to be probably, you know, enormous. But we need to find some ways how to deliver the part, at least small, very small part of the money which now the immigrants really bring as well. So that's something that should be changed. And I think that this motivations and networkings are very much needed. And without that, there we won't be able to cope well forever.
Thank you, Marie. There is a question for you also. How do you assess the level of labor market inclusion of Ukrainian refugees in the Czech Republic? What are the key challenges in this area? Is the cooperation with the private sector satisfactory in this regard? Please comment.
I had an unpleasant discussion about that with the Minister of Social Affairs the last week before, because the Czech Republic has really high numbers of Ukrainians who are already employed. So it's officially understood as some success, but I'm very skeptical about that because most of them work very much under their qualification and they do not make much money, even though they could. So I think that we you know managed well on a temporary or current basis, but it wasn't wise to look only for the short time solution. On the other hand, what we get to hear very often is that the Ukrainian government doesn't wish people to really have fully their recognized qualification because it increases the probability of people staying in hosting countries, and that's not what Ukraine wishes. But I think I still believe that there could be some better solutions. So no, I don't see it as a huge success. But I understand, you know, the logic behind that, and I also think that what Poland did really well was that the if I understand well, that the inclusion of certain professions into labor market like doctors or teachers were made much easier for certain periods. So the Czech Republic did something similar, but on much lower scale. So this is where we, for example, can probably find the inspiration from Poland.
Thank you, Marie.
May I one sentence to that?
Of course.
According to the Eurostat statistics, do you know what country have now the lowest unemployment rate in European Union? The first one. The second one? Yes, exactly. It means that there's the two countries who welcome the hundreds of thousands of war refugees from Ukraine have now the lowest unemployment rate. I don't think so this is a coincidence, but it is fact.
Welcome. Andrzej Nikołajczuk, SGH. It's much easier to welcome migrants from other countries if you have so low rate of unemployment, and that's obvious. And we know that Southern Europe countries like Italy, Spain, Portugal, Greece, that disaster concerning the rate of unemployment. So that's the first that helped a lot.
Thank you. There is another question.
Thomas.
researcher as well, part-time at the Center for Migration Research at University of Warsaw. Thank you very much for your comments concerning the local NGOs, and I agree fully with this ANP concept that you mentioned, that ad hoc need-based partnerships. I think it was present in Lublin as well with our committee, and I appreciate your concerns what happens to NGOs that are right now, I don't know, funded greatly by the big donors, that after they exit this catastrophic perspective that was mentioned by Professor Duszczyk, I think is present. It was easy at the very beginning to get funds because it was everything the philosophy of one pager. Send me one pager and I will give you $100,000. You know, this was the beginning of the discussion, but then half a year of negotiations. So one pager was not very easy. My comment to your concerns is the following. The European Union funds were not used so much for integration of migrants during this period of war, because the first AMIF, Asylum Migration Integration Fund, has been closed, and the next one has not been started yet, really. So right now in Europe, there will be $10 billion for integration, asylum, and returns, of course. And some part of that, about 230 million, was already allocated to Poland for the next 7 years. So maybe for the NGOs, it will be an opportunity to go back to AMIF funds that are distributed by the government, unfortunately, because the government tends to, you know, fund special types of organizations. But this is a potential which may be helpful, and I believe it's a good thing to promote to the big donors. Don't move out, but stay and help local NGOs to be part of AMIF, because we need 15 or 25% of contribution to those funds, because we'll not be able to fund it. The donors did not require any funds to do actions, and European Union needs 15 or 25% of contribution. So it will be a big change for most of the NGOs in Poland, I think, and the chance as well.
Thank you. Patrice, would you like to comment this? Yeah, I know. Yes. Yes. No. It's okay. Okay. So another question. It is also about NGOs to you, Patrice, and anyone who would like to comment also as well. All know NGOs played and are still playing an important role in the crisis response. Nonetheless, most of them are already overloaded with the work before. February 2022, and complained that they have no capability to provide support to all migrants in need. Isn't it that we praise NGOs' responses, and we should do so, but at the same time we do not pay enough attention what is the quality of services and if they meet the needs? At the same time, we are quite fast to blame others actors for their actions and shortcomings, for example, central and local governments.
Well, I can say that, yeah, NGOs, I think, everywhere feel overwhelmed and overworked. I guess the area that I would like to focus on, and I would love to get any data on this, is how much of the international funds that have been raised for humanitarian assistance, reception, integration, have actually gone to local NGOs. And there aren't that many reports out yet. The reports that do exist, again, we have a quote that says the localization efforts have been largely stalled because so much of the money, or so little of the money, is going to local NGOs that are doing most of the work. So that would be my, you know, interest and desire for more research, is to see how much money international organizations are giving to supporting local NGOs and local actors.
If I can refer to that, it's a question with a hypothesis, and to the previous comment, we are now apparently and understandably focusing on the current situation. However, I see some parallels that give hope that Polish NGOs will once again capitalize on their experience now that they suddenly, some of them, got engaged in supporting refugees, in providing humanitarian assistance themselves, also to people who stayed in Ukraine. Let us remember that in the beginning of the 90s, Polish NGOs were recipients of official aid, and later on, when Poland itself developed its own bilateral development cooperation program, suddenly, or also, of course, after Poland joined the European Union, many Polish NGOs started to provide development cooperation, including humanitarian assistance abroad. So this experience from initially recipient and then provider, it was possible, and I do believe it will be possible once again. And although funds are important, and let's hope that internationals have learned their lesson, also the know-how that now, over the short period of time, many NGOs that haven't previously been engaged neither in humanitarian assistance nor would work with refugees, that they're going to capitalize on this know-how and keep working in that direction in the future as well. And also to the previous round of issues that were discussed, I do agree that we should be all very vigilant that, like many other issues that some political parties weaponize, migration can also be weaponized, and it is for all of us academics and NGOs to be vigilant and call them out if they do this.
Very briefly, I think that the situation at now is a little bit different than, for example, before 2022, because at now all NGOs, even if they are not dealing, with the migration issue, for example, if they're dealing with the people, with the elder people, or different people with disabilities, migrants are in the all activities, in the all activities of our life. That's why, for example, still NGOs who work, for example, with the people with disability, and now they have Ukrainians. They have also the people from other countries. NGOs who work with the elder people, and now they have Ukrainians. That's why I think so. In every activity, we should take to account. We should take to account that migrants will be visible in all activities, in all part of our life. That's why it is this different situation. And now, of course, we have very quite strong NGOs dealing with migration issues, humanitarian actions, for example, but also with all of these organizations who are dealing with the different social issues with migrants at now. That's why this is the, I think so, this will be also the challenge in the future.
Thank you very much. Thank you for this panel, for this session, very important topic, very meaningful. And I invite you to continue this, our issues during our coffee break. Thank you very much.
So just to remind you, so we have half an hour and we should be here in 30 minutes, so 11:45, let's put it in this way. And I hope that you'll stay with us. After the second session, there will be also a lunch for you. Thank you very much. And thanks to our guests. Okay, so hello, everyone. I hope that you enjoyed our short coffee break. In fact, sandwich and tortilla break. So now we are moving to the second main part of our event. So this is the roundtable titled Reception and Integration of Migrants in Poland, an Institutional and NGOs Perspective. So this time we decided to skip the typical way of delivering the research and practice related content, so having like typical speeches supported by PowerPoint. Instead of it, we have five great speakers, and I know all of them, as you may guess. So they are not here by accident. This is the intentional decision. So we have two colleagues from EGOs, so intergovernmental organizations. We have one representative of the local government, but in fact an association of 12 Polish cities. And then we have two colleagues from academia/NGO that will provide a kind of overview regarding broadly understood civil society in Poland. So we are trying to cover different sectors different groups of actors, state and non-state, that are involved in migration governance in Poland. So this session is specifically focused on how migrants are received in Poland, and also what types of integration activities are put in place or might be addressed to broadly understood group of migrants, foreigners. So this, it's not only about those that we consider forced migrants from Ukraine 2022. So I will now briefly present my colleagues. I don't know if you can see me, but it does not matter. I'm not the star here. So we have Ms. Magdalena Wojno, that this time is here on behalf of the International Organization for Migration Poland. Say hello to everyone, Magda. Then we have Mr. Szymon Pogorzelski, that is here on behalf of the European Commission DG Home. He represents the Unit Migration Management Coordination. We have also, so these are our two EGO stakeholders. Then we have Mr. Tomasz Fiołek, that is Managing Director of the Union of Polish Metropolises. So just to tell, to explain those of you that are not familiar with UPM, so this is the association of 12 biggest cities in Poland. Sometimes they are considered more opposition-oriented, but they were very active in receiving forced migrants last year, also in terms of research and publications. Then we have Dr. Grzegorz Demel from Institute of Political Studies, Polish Academy of Sciences. Hello, we've just met. This is a very fresh relationship because we've met 2 weeks ago during the conference of the Association of Study of Nations at the Columbia University. And I've seen Grzegorz and his colleague very interesting presentation regarding also receiving forced migrants from Ukraine, but focused on the role played by Ukrainian organizations and civil society. So this is also that is sometimes omitted in these discussions we have in the country. And then we have another colleague from migration field and NGO sector, Mr. Sarian Jarosz, that is here as the representative of Migration Consortium, because he was our colleague, Witold Klaus, are the co-editors of the big report now available in Polish and English, Polish School of Assistance, where we covered more than 10 different cities, big, medium-sized and small, in terms of reception and integration activities, once again, for forced migrants from Ukraine in 2022. So anyway, the focus will be on UA or citizens or other migrants from Ukraine. And now I would like to give the floor each of my guests. So each of you has 10 minutes to provide the general statement from your perspective and your institution within the field of our roundtable. So what do you want to say? How do you want to contribute to this debate about reception, integration of migrants in Poland? And after, the floor will be yours, also to our audience online. And if not, I have some smart questions, I hope. So please remember to use microphone and unmute it. Magda, you are going as the first.
Can you hear me? Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much for invitation. I started work in IOM last year in November. After war in Ukraine, IOM has grown very quickly. It exists in Poland since 2002. And it is, of course, international organization agenda UN, and we cooperate with different partners, stakeholders at the different level. Of course, I mean, it is Polish government, local authorities, private sector, and NGOs. And I would like to tell you about our activities in area of labor market, because I represent the labor, migration and social inclusion team. And that what we started do after the war, of course, it was not only activities in this area. Of course, we started to support emergency activities, not only in Warsaw, of course, in all Poland. And we started very actively cooperate with local governments in this area. And what is the most important with our activities that we try to dedicate our activities for different stakeholders, not only for migrants, but also for official, also for employers. And we want to, we try to be comparative with another activities in Poland, and according with that what is happening in different local area. Yes, so this that what is very important for us. This is synergy. Yes, and supporting not double activities, because we know that in Poland now, especially now, it's a lot of different body and institution who try to help support refugees, but also migrants, not only refugees from Ukraine. And we last year and at the beginning of this year, we opened some few integration centers for foreigners, and main of task of the center, this is activity activation on refugees on labor market, because we think that this is the first what they should get, this is the job and be independence after, of course, this first time, this is first month coming to Poland. And we centers, we had six centers in Poland, not only in the biggest city, but also in a smaller like Piaseczno. Of course, we consulted this decision with local government to know what they have needs, and is there another partner or another organization who has just provide this kind of support. So in our centers, we create them with cooperation with NGOs because they know the local situation. And how I said, labor activity. This is this means that we provide some Polish language class, of course, but not only Polish, but also English language class. We have also some job counseling and business counseling. And what was necessary, it was provide also psychological support for our beneficiary, because you know, sometimes to make a decision to be active on the labor market, it's it was depends of their physical situation. And we know, everyone know that most of refugees are women, so we also provide some activities for children during they took part in our in our services. And what next? What is important? How I said, we provide some activities not only for migrants, but also for employers and for different officials. And we started to organize a roundtable on the labor market and integration for refugees from Ukraine. And in this roundtable took part a lot of people from different sectors, and it was very interesting because they could and they could sharing with their good practices, they could share with their solution, they could find some solution for their institution. And they could map some needs, not general, not only in their organization, but they could see some problems, some challenge from the whole perspective, not only from the employers, etc. And we discussed about women, we discussed about how to support young people, we discussed how to support people with disabilities, how to support develop of social economic in Poland. And we discussed also how employers can create positive space, positive condition for new employee from Ukraine. And so this is some kind of networking also, but we make some trainings for different different stakeholders. And for example, I'm making now a non-discrimination training for labor offices, and we have a lot of people. One training is about 70 people. So it's very important, it's very needs. And of course, what we are doing now more, we cooperate with academic, of course, also with in a labor market area. It will help us to create better our activities. And in the project, technical support for facilitate to social and labor market inclusion on third country nationals in Poland, including those fleeing from Ukraine. This is a project founded by DG Reform. We are doing something very important for everyone. This is a comparative analysis of Polish and Ukrainian skills and profession. And this is very huge challenges because first we found 51 occupation, but now we have almost 500 because there is one occupation and there is different kind of doctors or another teachers or another profession. And it will be of course report of this analysis will be public, and I suppose that we will make some event to share with you. But this is I know that very important not only for Polish employers, not only for Polish labor offices, but also for Ukrainian. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Magda. Almost 10 minutes, a bit longer, so you should look always into my eyes. So then we have the second speaker, Szymon, European Commission. So now you have your time. Unmute.
Yes, hello.
Yes, now it's perfect.
So my name is Szymon Pogorzelski. I work at the European Commission, the part of the European Commission that follows the topics of migration and home affairs. This is the commission equivalent of the Polish Ministry of Interior, MSWiA, and of course we closely cooperate as regards the issues of migration with other parts of the European Commission, including in particular the parts of the commission dealing with social and labor market integration. Presentation that I have for you today, the brief introduction, is about what the EU is doing as regards the Russian aggression and the consequences of the Russian aggression in the European Union, in particular as regards the people under temporary protection who came from Ukraine to countries such as Poland, and some elements on what we do to support the member states also with funding. Now, what we did immediately after the Russian aggression, unprovoked Russian aggression against Ukraine, is we mobilized a legal instrument called Temporary Protection Directive, in Polish Dyrektywa o Ochronie Czasowej, and this is the instrument which allowed all member states to welcome the very substantial, very high number of people who came in a very short period of time into the European Union, notably through the Polish borders with Ukraine, to allow them to get protection, to have the legal means in order to standardize the welcoming measures in the context of accommodation, education, access to the labor market, and the provision of healthcare. To date, we have about 4 million people registered for temporary protection in Poland. The highest number is in the EU, the highest number is in Poland. Around 1 million people, and a slightly lower but also high 1 million around in Germany, and then there is Czechia and other countries. So half of these people are located in Poland and then also in Germany. The what we have this temporary protection platform, which is a tool used by member states to cross-check whether individuals from Ukraine who came from Ukraine register for temporary protection in one single member state. This is to allow coordination of response, proper access to information, but also to prevent abuse. The person under the Temporary Protection Directive is entitled to benefits within one state only in the European Union, but not more than one. Then we established so-called Solidarity Platform, which is a very unique tool of cooperation and operational coordination between European member states, the Commission and European member states, and various partners. The Solidarity Platform meets regularly in various configurations. The core are the member states and the Commission, but then there are also other stakeholders. To give an example, we regularly have presence of our international partners such as UNHCR, IOM, and others, and UNICEF also. And we regularly meet with non-governmental organizations in the scope of this solidarity platform. There are sessions for local authorities, municipalities also, as well as for international partners such as our allies in the United States, Canada, and United Kingdom, who implement similar measures for protection of people who arrived from Ukraine in search of protection. In terms of operational framework, we have this 10-point plan on Ukraine, which goes across the policy fields and operational measures to coordinate this response given by the European Union and by European Union member states. One example of such measure is the Safe Homes Initiative, which we developed in the form of a guidance for member states and relevant actors within the European Union, which support private hosts. The implementation of the project that builds on the top of the guidance is also envisaged in Poland, a bit slower, I would say, than we were hoped for initially, but eventually it's picking up. And this is aimed to support private hosts to welcome people. Of course, this is just one of many solutions that are out there. But in a crisis situation, this is what we see on the ground. So we came up with this guidance to help and steer a little bit where possible this process to seek for best practices and to consider recommendations. Then we launched this EU talent pool pilot, which we do jointly with this European labor authorities and labor offices across the European Union. Poland is part of the pilot, and we hope to match the skills of the incoming displaced people with the demand of the employers. We also have a common plan against human trafficking to protect people fleeing the war. So essentially, there were considerable fears about the THB trafficking in human beings as regards displaced people who are often vulnerable. And we have measures both on the prevention side, but also on the information side, but also on the law enforcement side to counter this risk and to protect people in need, people under temporary protection. We also developed these frequently asked questions on going home for those Ukrainians who wish to do so on a voluntary basis to provide safeguards for those who wish to come back, but eventually they may decide to come back again to the European Union in search of protection. Then we also have special measures for protection on children, including on elements how to address challenges related to registration, recognition of guardianship documents issued in Ukraine, and finding suitable accommodation and care. And we work closely with our partners, including notably UNICEF and UNHCR, to process these, let's say, vulnerable individuals. Then I mentioned international partners, and we know that the our friends from United States, Canada, and United Kingdom, they also implement and coordinate with us to a certain extent the measures of protection that they implement in these countries. Now, on the operational and policy side, what I would like to underline is that we, as the European Union and the European Commission, remained committed to helping people fleeing the invasion and helping them to find a sense of normalcy again. We will continue providing protection to those in need as long as the unjustified and unprovoked Russian invasion continues. As regards funding, just very briefly, we did provide very large flexibilities to member states, including to Poland, already in the so-called 2014-2020 programming period. We allowed to shift the available and still underused or unused funding, which perhaps was blocked for various reasons, for other measures, to shift it and to put it into issues such as shelter, food, healthcare, and extra staffing. We have the new generation of Home Affairs funds, so the part of Commission that I represent on migration, border management, and security. In Poland, this is implemented mainly through the national programs, so-called Polish national programs under these funds. And we have the total of around half a billion euros for this programming. And I had the honor to represent the Commission on the first actually monitoring committee of these funds, and the Polish municipalities are represented there, the Polish NGOs and international partners, including IOM and UNHCR. So this is a very promising source of funding as regards support to migration topics, including those from Ukraine. Finally, we have very large flexibilities in cohesion funding, and I just want to mention that Poland used nicely the cohesion funding envelopes from 2014-2020 programming period under the regional operational programs. To give an example of such measures, the new priority axes were introduced in Świętokrzyskie, Opolskie, Małopolskie, and Pomorskie, and there were dedicated measures added on these programs, plus the national programs such as Operational Program Knowledge Education Development or Czechia-Poland Interreg Program. In the new programming period, we are aware that Poland wishes to use these flexibilities further, and even higher amounts are envisaged within relevant programs by the Polish authorities, so we gave the opportunity to do so, plus we mobilized certain additional funding that is possible for these emergency measures, such as the ones related to the massive inflow of people in early 2022. Thank you very much.
Perfect. You can see that. One can see that you work for like very important institution because you are almost like 10 minutes. When people... Yes, exactly. So that is good. Thank you. So we are after two introductory speeches by two different intergovernmental organizations. So we have IOM specializing in migration governance, and not only forced migration like UNHCR. And then we have the EC, DG Home. So let's say like the ministry that is responsible for internal migration issues. So we have two good dossier on this Polish case. And now we are moving from this supranational level to subnational level. So as you can see, we are skipping to some extent the central government level. This is not by accident. So now, this was a joke. There will be too much to say. So now we have Tomasz. So could you please tell us more what was the role of the local governments? What is the role and everything that you would like to share from the point of view of your Union of Polish Metropolises?
Good morning. Thank you for the invitation. I have never been so stressed out before by the moderator as today, so I don't know what to say. People who are attending this meeting via internet are so far safe than me. Okay, but I try. My hands shaking. Union of Polish Metropolises is an association of Polish cities, 12 biggest cities, but not only city in the administrative borders is very important, but the whole metropolitan areas, so the smaller municipalities around the central city, and we try to see all the region metropolitan areas as well. At the beginning of the war, we were shocked, and we have to figure out how to help our cities. Our Union of Polish Metropolitans is kind of think tank, so we can of course help directly in the cities, but 20 people, I don't know if it's very useful for the mayors. So we decided to help our city with the data. We try to collect good quality data. We buy some good quality data. We hire some experts and professors to prepare a very proper methodology. And all of our reports are on our websites. We started translated into English at the same time in Polish. And we started with four analyses and reports. I only called a team. Estimation of the number of Ukrainians in Poland and the 12 largest metropolitan areas. I think it was the first, of course, ours so the better, estimate of the Ukrainians in Poland. But as I repeat it now and perhaps a few times more, our methodology is clear. You can argue with the methodology, but you have show your own methodology, different methodology. And we try to find out how many Ukrainians are in Poland in general, and compared to the number before the war started. It was the first It was the first step. And after a few months, we try to update this data, and we did it. Second, we want to count, one of our previous speaker said about the children, and we try to find the number of Ukrainian school children in the 12 largest cities. In Poland, we've got the SEO, System of Information of Education, let's say, and we try to find out how many school children is in our 12 biggest cities. Of course, we know that a lot of children are not in the system. And even today, there is very difficult to calculate how many children learning in Poland using remote education from Ukraine, how many children are outside the system. And it's very stressed for us because we like very precise data, and here it's very difficult to find them. We try to use the moment when our guests starting to applying for our Polish personal number, PESEL in Polish ID number, and we ask them simply, people who are staying in the queues, what are they thinking about the war, what are the predictions for them, and what are the fears, and so on. And last but not least, we ask Polish inhabitants in our cities how they help in refugees from Ukraine. And we try to paint a bigger picture of this, basing off methodology and data. And of course, we share with this not only with our mayors, I hope that they use it, but all the international, let's say, society, because a lot of international organization came to Poland or sent to Poland more employees. And I know that from Council of Europe, from UNICEF or UNHCR, our reports were written, and from the DG, from European Commission, they were interested in our data, and we know it. And in the end of June this year, we tried to prepare updated version of our report with the data from October 2022. I know that it's not up-to-date data for today, but the Ukrainians moved very often, very quickly, in very not obvious direction. We've got one methodology challenge, because we assume and we use the information that we use information from the phone, from the phones, from GSM not only, of course, and we assume that if the phone was connected with the Ukrainian base, it was one of very important factor for our methodology. But after the year, a lot of these phones can't contact with the base on Ukraine, so we have to change our methodology. And I hope that at the beginning of July, we will show you our new data. And this is our point of view. And the last sentence and last observation. In 2017, we established a work group, Migration and Integration Work Group. Our Union of Polish Metropolises is named by Paweł Adamowicz, previous mayor of Gdańsk, and he was the one who decided to write a declaration of Union of Polish Metropolises, and after the declaration we established a work group. I mentioned about it because it was very active group, and during these 5 years or five before the war started, all of people from our cities know each other, and they work with the Syrian migrants, with the Belarus border problems and challenges. And when the war started, we didn't have to find the proper people from our cities. We simply called them. We at the time we've got a very good expert and coordinator of this group, and the work was very good. And very often we work during the night. We have to not only changing the best and best practices, some kind of advices, but we also work with government, central government, with the law. We tried. There was a law in Poland in 3 weeks. Of course, I think after the war started, and in Union of Polish Metropolises and in our cities, we work with government for the chapters of the law. And this is our perspective from this organization, who is kind of umbrella organization and a think tank, and we try to deliver good quality data. Thank you.
Okay, Tomasz, thank you very much. As everyone can see and hear, you are pretty well after this contribution with such a moderator as I am. So thank you very much. And now we are moving from the local government to also, let's say, local stakeholders, but understood as civil society. And the question that arises here is, who might be included in the civil society in our country? And here comes the contribution by Grzegorz. Very strongly rooted in research, but also in practice. So you have 10 minutes.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me. The speeches we had a chance to listen to were from inside. It was internal view of my colleagues. I'm going to talk from the external point of view about my observations, although there were observations, participatory observations, and even very engaged observations. So I have to start with some very obvious thing, that Ukrainian community in Poland is constituted by at least three elements: Ukrainian national minority members, Polish citizens, Ukrainian migrants who had arrived in Poland before the full-scale war started, and the third, the most recent group of Ukrainian war refugees. And for analytical purposes, we should, I think, distinguish those groups. After Euromaidan 2014, the concept of Ukrainian diasporic civil society in Poland has emerged in scientific discourse. I generally agree with this perspective, and personally welcome the very phenomenon, but I think that we could look differently and consider Ukrainians as a less or more specific element of civil society in Poland, general civic society in Poland. I find this perspective more inclusive and better fitting the reality, as we can observe not only transnational mobilization for assistance to Ukraine, but also the clear attempts of Ukrainian organizations to act as a significant actor in Polish public sphere. As far as the recent situation is concerned, we can observe at least three facets of the issue. First, the cooperation among Ukrainian organizations in Poland, both minority and migrant. Secondly, activity of Ukrainian organizations as a part of general humanitarian search in Poland. And thirdly, Ukrainian organizations becoming partners for local authorities. What I want to point here are the recent examples of Ukrainian organizations' activity going beyond the Ukrainian ethnic context. So, leading Ukrainian NGOs appreciate Polish government's attitude towards Ukrainian refugees and all the help provided by Poland. But at the same time, they publicly call for human treatment of irregular refugee migrants on the Polish-Belarusian border. In my opinion, it confirmed that Ukrainian community has truly matured as a significant part of Polish civil society, firmly standing by values such as legalism and human rights, regardless of the political conjuncture. The leading Ukrainian organizations not only organize help for Ukrainian war refugees, but are also very attentive to the needs of the most vulnerable groups fleeing Ukraine. They counteract the discrimination of Roma people in both Poland and Ukraine by both authorities and general public, including war refugees themselves. In other occasion, one of Ukrainian leaders reminded that Polish society engaged in helping Ukraine should not forget about Belarusian political refugees in Poland. In 2021, the Coalition of Minority and Migrant Organizations was established. Ukrainian organizations, both minority and migrant, were among its co-founders. The coalition is supposed to support collaboration of various minority and migrant groups and lobby their common interests. And now about the discussion, which has not been launched so far. The established position of the minority within Polish society has been challenged by migrants who outnumber minority members. Ukrainian national minority is convinced that they must fight for recognition, as in result of the presence of newcomers from Ukraine, they are losing visibility and grounded position. Different groups, representatives, do not enjoy equal access to different resources. Not only are there differences between citizens and not citizens, but economic migrants could also express their dissatisfaction with better opportunities the refugees were granted. At the same time, the far right side of Polish political spectrum creates a generalized Ukrainians, constituted by all migrants, war refugees, and Ukrainian national minority members. For Polish right radicals, arrival of Ukrainians was an argument for restricting both immigration as such and national minority rights. In summer 2022, they demanded restriction of minority rights because
they would be used and abused by growing group of newcomers. And it was being done in order to prevent Ukrainian political subjectivity in Poland and protect ethno-national unity of Poland. In turn, liberal and left-wing formations and experts and NGO activists welcome migrants' input in economy and culture and encourage them to participate in Polish politics. However, in practice, their stances are most often limited to indicating that Polish society is not prepared to perform in a multicultural reality. The questions of citizenship acquisition, of migrants being granted a right to vote in local elections, are not widely discussed, despite the fact that they have been raised by Ukrainian activists for several years already. Even the newcomers' civic engagement in local consultation mechanisms, like participatory budget, is discussed widely almost only as reaction to some alarming fake news, like it was in Wrocław last year. And we need to get to know the broader vision of Ukrainians' presence in Poland, or even two visions, one of the general society and one of newcomers from Ukraine. Who should they be in Poland? And who do they want to be in Poland? Guests with limited impact on public affairs? Or neighbors integrated not only in economic and cultural life, but also in decision-making processes? Or in the predictable future, co-citizens? Conclusion is for me easy, that these issues are poorly addressed in public debate. Thank you.
So, I was like, you know, checking just where we are with your speech, because I have an insight to this contribution. But this is what we've heard, to be more serious, at the conference in New York, and it was really something new, because so far we can hear a lot about how to receive the Poland as a humanitarian great power, and so on and so on. So this is something fresh. This is something new, stressing the role of Ukrainian diaspora and community. Also, what was stressed in at least one of the reports of Union of Polish Metropolises. So now we are moving to the very last panelist and contribution, and this time it's Sarjan, that, as I already said, has his great contribution to prepare one of the best publications that we have in 2022-2023 in the field of reception and integration. So please tell us a few words about Polish School of Assistance, Polska Szkoła Pomagania, but also about, if you want, other activities and role of Polish Migration Consortium. To those of you that are not familiar with it, I will only say that this is a cooperation platform of few, even several now, more than 10, I think, nine Polish NGOs very active and operating in the field of migration governance. So Sarjan, 10 minutes.
Sure. Hi, I have a pleasure to represent third sector from the first corner of this table. I will follow my colleagues, but will try not to sound repetitive. I'm a research coordinator in Migration Consortium. This is the organization of main migration oriented, but also some of the migration led organizations, such as Ukrainian House, Amnesty International Poland, Helsinki Foundation, Polish Migration Forum, and so on. I will tell you a little bit about, not a little bit, but about our findings from our report, Polish School of Assistance, that is available right now in English. Maybe soon will be also available in Ukrainian. And about our ongoing activities, because we right now are finalizing another report and starting a new two-year-long program on mapping humanitarian narratives on reception and integration of Ukrainians in Poland. I will tell you a little bit about Polish School of Assistance. Unfortunately, I cannot show you, but this is our conjoint research that we conducted with our brilliant academic colleagues in 13 municipalities that we categorized in three categories: small, medium, and bigger municipalities and cities, to identify, within two stages of reception and integration, to identify the main actors, risks, challenges, good practices, and propose some recommendations, followed by the advocacy work on good practices in reception and integration of refugees and migrants. And as I mentioned already, we focus on two stages. Those two stages are very different, and we are right now trying to emphasize on it. But first, I will tell you about our research that we conduct right now, because it's very much connected. Right now, we finalized the research on collective accommodation and legislative changes on collective accommodation in Poland, in six regions of Poland. As we see the legislative changes that is discriminatory and putting a lot of risk, putting refugees to a lot of risk, and enhancing the risk of homelessness for refugees, and discriminatory treatment to some vulnerable groups such as Roma. And another research that we right now starting with, we just launched it with ODI, Humanitarian Policy Group, with our Ukrainian partner as well, Open Source Foundation, will be focused on humanitarian narratives, mapping humanitarian narratives, followed by our report as well on simplifying it, what has worked, what didn't, in the cooperations between non-governmental actors and, for example, NGOs and other actors involved in the humanitarian response. So I will tell you just some of our findings and recommendations. There are many more. What we found special, not to also repeat after my colleagues, we decided to investigate a little bit on how the reception and the integration has worked over the year in small cities, medium cities, big cities. And what we discovered is the huge role that civil society took on themselves. In some cases, the absence or reluctance from the central authorities or even local authorities, but of course it was inconsistent. It was very, very dependent on the regions. As my colleague already said, we also emphasize in the report not only the presence, but the enormous engagement of Ukrainian diaspora and community in Poland. Also by the migrant-led organizations, such as Ukrainian House, which is connected with another point that is very difficult to emphasize, but is very important for us as a third sector, which is, I would say, third sector fatigue that we, after over a year, we face right now, which is very difficult to, from our perspective, to negotiate with bigger actors. It's connected also with the localization, it's connected with the discommunication with some other actors involved. What I'm trying to say is that we are exhausted in a way that what we have what we have said, this was quite consistent. Local authorities, local organizations, but also bigger organizations, in some cases has been affected by the growth of over 5 or even 10-fold. There are out of organizations that that were 5 to 10 people, right now we have 200. And there are organizations that reached or even overcame their capacity, also operational capacity, with a lot of duties which is often delegated and relegated. This is a situation of the, maybe it's a hard way to put it, but it's a way of, let's say, uncomfortable blackmail, in a way that in the absence of third sector and civil society, many of those things, especially the refugees and migrants with special needs, those groups will not be addressed, the assistance will not be provided, but at the very same time, the organizations cannot withdraw. But at the very same time, without the withdrawal, it's something that I will tell now, the issue which is a lack of sustainability. What we face right now is also the withdrawal of donors and NGOs. We face it a little bit, and also the fading interest of public opinion, which is, of course, connected with the visibility, but also accessibility and access to the resources. Many of the organizations, as well as migrant-led, has hired few hundred of the employees, and right now they are facing the risk that they will have to that the need will still be there, as the aggression didn't end. The problem will not disappear, but the organization will not have capacity with every month. The capacity to address it will be limited much more. Another aspect that I want to mention is, of course, the political discourse that we was already mentioned as well. That we also, what we are facing is particular groups, especially vulnerable groups, that are facing first cases, or not even cases, but what we see is a trending rise of discriminatory treatment in the public space, not only of Ukrainians, but also of the groups, also on the level of public policy and access to resources and services, which is Roma, LGBTI people, and which is quite surprising, but what we see is a huge increase in anti-Belarusian and anti-Russian rhetorics with quite a big diaspora in Poland of those who, for example, were political prisoners and refugees, which is this preferential treatment. We talked about double standards at the borders, but there are also double standards in the treatment of specific minority groups. Yes, I know. Another thing is the, you know, to end on the positive note, we noticed the actors that we would never expect to provide support, which is private sector. The private sector has been probably, from our research, as we identified, was the best actor to cooperate with from the side of NGOs, considering the simplified procedures, simplified communication, clear goals, and of course, Ukrainian diaspora as well. Yes. And the last aspect is, of course, the emphasis that we right now have to put on localization, that we right now want to voice up in the way of the access to resources, but also, let's say, renegotiating the need to negotiate the conditions of cooperations. And at the very same time, coming back to the report itself, how this assistance from the third sector is offered in different regions. Some of the organizations would never call themselves humanitarian, I know, but I don't even have a table. And they want to come back to their ongoing integration and cultural activities, but they have to provide humanitarian assistance, which in many cases they had to learn how to do it very fast. This is the situation we are facing right now. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Sarjan. So, bravo for all our speakers/panelists, because anyway, it took us around 50 minutes to get all these contributions, but it's good to hear the kind of different statements from the perspective of different stakeholders, more formalized and institutionalized, and those that are more, let's say, grassroots or bottom up. So thank you very much. And before my questions, if any, I would love to get some statements, questions, comments from your side. I will start with the audience here on site, and then I will move to you guys online. So please stay with us. We will finish a bit earlier because I know that some of you have to leave, but there is still lunch behind this door. So let's have the discussion till up to 10 past one, and then you are invited to lunch. So
Thank you so much. I have so many questions, but I will limit it in the interest of everyone's time. Saren, I appreciate you bringing up the role of business. That came up a little bit in some of the other presentations. So do you have any other big take-homes about how we can encourage more business involvement or any ideas? I mean, one thing you said was also something that I've thought about that I didn't expect people to talk about the important role of business. And I guess to anyone on the panel, I was thinking Shimon, but anyone who might be able to point me in the direction of the money data on how much money is actually going to local organizations or local government, because that's something we're all talking about. And I know that the city governments have been trying to talk to internationals as well as the national government about pushing more money to cities and regions rather than having all the money go through the central government in Warsaw. So is there any place I could look that might provide me with some data on who's getting the money and where the money's going?
So let's collect some questions and maybe try to aggregate them. And also other speakers, even if you are not addressed directly, you are welcome also to refer to the questions that will be collected.
Yeah, I would like to provide a little bit of feedback regarding the role of the private sector. When I conducted interviews among Polish non-government organizations engaged in development cooperation and humanitarian assistance abroad a few years back, one of their biggest pain was the lack of engagement, even when directly addressed by Polish businessmen, even about issues like starving children. No, absolutely no interest of supporting. And this is an important context of the indeed commendable engagement now of the private sector. And also a follow-up of the conversation we started at Coffee Break with Dr. Demel regarding the Polish-Ukrainian minority. So my question is like a general kind of reflection for all of us, what kind of society we are. If Polish Ukrainians feel threatened by the coming war refugees of their own ethnicity, and also recently I remember research regarding reluctance among Polish society towards Polish refugees, and to my surprise, the group that was most reluctant were young women. And in Polish society now, young women are supposed to be the more progressive thinking. But then regarding refugees, and so I've been thinking, oh, is it because many of those war refugees are also young women? What's wrong with us? I don't want to mention, to finish on such a moralizing note, but I see here some commonalities with the attitude of a Polish-Ukrainian minority. Thank you.
Thank you. Now, Justyna.
Thank you, Sina Szałańska, Center of Migration Research Warsaw, and also ACAP's Norwegian Refugee Council. So all the speakers mentioned different types of cooperation in terms of reception, in terms of integration and refugees. And I'm wondering, because I'm aware that Poland doesn't have its own migration policy, but I'm wondering whether these are like types of cooperation could lead to any like durable pattern of cooperation. Have you seen any structure of this cooperation? And do you think that this structure, that this like beginning of the cooperation types can be like durable in a longer perspective? So this is the first question. And the second one is that all you mentioned, the support, the program that you offered, that your organization offers to refugees from Ukraine, but also that this support is diminishing, has been diminishing recently. And I also know that there is a lot of refugees who came back to Ukraine, actually. This is like from abroad, approximately 1 million came back to Ukraine, also to some areas, frontline areas, dangerous ones. So I'm wondering, is there any like relation between this diminishing assistance and the people who are going back to dangerous places in Ukraine? Thank you.
So Janusz and Wojciech.
Very short. I only want to mention one organization from the Catholic Church, which calls Caritas. As we know, it's a Caritas International, Caritas specific countries, and they have the connection. And as far as I know, they are cooperating in the international level for help for Ukrainians, refugees. Regarding the Polish Caritas in Warsaw, for example, each diocese is a small unit. In Warsaw, there's Towarowa Street, Alior Bank gave the, I don't know how it happened, but gave the, no, two floors at least in high buildings for this Caritas. And I visited a few weeks ago, and it was incredible work. A lot of people, a lot of Ukrainians, children were, had the lessons, they were playing. It means that it was incredible, very active help for these people in the need. Thank you.
Thank you. Wojciech Panikiewski, UNICEF. It's also a question concerning the, or rather addressed to the third sector and to NGO representatives. You were mentioning about the NGO's fatigue and the sort of fatigue in a sense of not having enough money, but also being tired of all the workload we've been facing for the last year. Are you preparing any kind of a exit strategy? And if you are thinking about this, are you taking into consideration what kind of consequences that would have for the migrant community and what kind of impact it might have on them? Thank you.
Okay, so let's stop here with the questions. My question would go only to all of you, but in a very general way. What do you think is the biggest added value of having intergovernmental organizations and international non-governmental organizations in Poland since 2022? So what is, from your perspective, the biggest added value? Okay, so let's start. Yeah, we can start from this direction, but very, very, be very like concise, okay? So we may have the contribution from each of our speakers, and then I would like to refer to the possible questions from our online audience.
Okay, I will address a few of those questions super short. So maybe I will start from business. The question about business. I think we were the first who did such a part, and we would actually like to investigate it much more in our upcoming report. There is what we've prepared, and I can send it. We can send it around later. What we've prepared, we actually talked with not only NGOs, local organizations, local governments, migrants, but also the representatives of business, and went through their documentations and programs. There were many advantages apart from the differences between, you know, other corporations. That were also many advantages that business offered that other actors just couldn't. Like in case of IKEA, in which IKEA has decided we specialized in furniture. We have it in our global strategy. So they just adapted their global strategy to address this specific issue. There were also, for example, Google, Meta, who, for example, apart from their support to NGOs, at this very same time, they conducted the ongoing activities on, for example, disinformation, war on disinformation and data protection, which was very important, especially for some of the groups of Ukrainians fleeing to Poland. So there are many, many aspects of this, and I think this is one of the very interesting issues that we would like to investigate more. In the report, we have a part on it with recommendations and some very specific areas. Okay, about the rise of the, as I understood the question correctly, my colleague for sure tell more about the rise of the anti-Ukrainian moods, social moods, but not only anti-Ukrainian, but also this, let's say, double treatment or limited visibility of some categories and some others. I think Helsinki Foundation is right now, will soon publish a report on this. Amnesty, our member organization Amnesty, just finished scoping and also published something, I think, 3 months ago. So there are, we will for sure, will try to monitor it as well with the Ukrainian House and Polish Migration Forum in this ongoing project. Because we also, I would be very honest with you, we are ready to prepare, considering preparation for the pre-electoral term. And this is something that we really, really need to be prepared on, to counteract on it. There are aspects that we didn't mention, I think, not that much. I think not that much. But for example, I really like the contribution on the aspect of gender aspect on this migration and this, how, for example, the reception or discourse on refugees from Ukraine is connecting, for example, that they are white refugees, mostly this is mostly female migration. So it's very interesting aspect, but there is also many of those areas in which we as third sector, we are trying to be monitoring a lot, like human trafficking, gender-based violence are just few of them. At the very same time, of course, youth protection, youth work with trauma-informed youth. So there are many aspects that are not that emphasized on other, for example, at the Polish-Belarusian border, which are at the Polish-Ukrainian border. And we are also cooperating on this with the Polish Ombudsman and Blue Dots. So yes, sorry, last one, I know. NGOs fatigue, exit strategy. Oof, I wish. No, not really. I mean, we have some scenarios, but right now this is also the issue with, I will be very honest with you, this is also the issue with this compassion fatigue or NGO fatigue, that if you are inside, you cannot really predict, you don't have a lot of capacity to predict other scenarios. It's like there are some exit strategies from specific organizations, but yes, but right now we are working on it. We are working on it and we'll be working. Yes, and with the local policies, we have good examples. I think I will just, to the end, I will give some good examples in which local authorities work very well with local NGOs. And this example is for sure Lublin and Homofaber. We love Homofaber, we love Lublin. This is a very successful cooperation. Okay, if you need any more, I'm happy to answer your questions after. Thank you.
Thank you. Everyone loved Homofaber, I think. And Ania Dąbrowska. As far as Ukrainian national minority in Poland is concerned and their concerns, as you asked, maybe I should have been more specific, but what I meant, talking about their concerns, it was about symbolic level. It was about symbolic level. Only symbolic. Why? Ukrainian national minority members, they are activists, they're observing the arrival of newcomers from Ukraine. They realized that they, newcomers, they outnumber us, they are well organized, and they are recognizable for Polish general society. So what I meant was only about this symbolic level. It's also about the power relations in this meaning that they have to figure out who has a right to speak on behalf of whom. Those are it's a power relation issue between different groups, but we should remember that they, Ukrainian national minority, they just have gained visibility after decades of forced assimilation, and that's the context to discuss the, this question. And as far as attitudes to refugees from Ukraine is concerned, I can add that I agree with social psychologists who propose to differ between symbolic traits and realistic traits, symbolic concerns and realistic concerns. Realistic are about labor market, about social expenditures, about accessibility of social services, and so on. While symbolic traits are about identity, are about history, are about this social, ethnocultural, ethno-national unity. So when we are talking about the concerns of Polish general society, due to arrival of newcomers from Ukraine and from other countries, I think we should take into consideration both dimensions, the realistic and the symbolic dimension. As my colleague said, before election, we can is going to be ready before election, yeah, your report, and I think it could be very interesting because those traits, those concerns, even if produced on the far right, their influence in mainstream discourse. They influence mainstream discourse, even if we can see it every day. But it happens. Thank you.
For long-term support, we need government, and it's very obvious. And in Poland, we've got quite a difficult situation when we simply can't talk about the additional money, additional financing, because we've got problem with the basic financing of our cities. We've got a lot of changes in Polish law and public finance that we are worried without Ukrainians, without refugees, if we can manage to prepare a good budget for the next year. So we've got this problem in Poland. Second sentence. We haven't got national-based migration strategy, but there was a question about the coordinating this process. I hope that some part of this process is coordinating in our association, for example, because the 70% of refugees came to the biggest cities and the metropolitan areas. And of course, we can't prepare national level migration strategy, but we try on our level to change the best practices and advise each other. I made two notes. And the last sentence, I want to mention about Professor Maciej Duszczyk, and he mentioned about the tension between Polish society and Ukrainian society. Perhaps not directly, but he thought about it. And in our reports, Neighborly Help, we ask our citizens, inhabitants in cities, do you think that the presence of refugees from Ukraine will be advantages or disadvantages for Poland and Poles in the long term in the following areas? And unfortunately, but perhaps it's obvious, for example, in the point state finance, there was 74% definitely disadvantage and rather disadvantages. So 74 no, 18 yes. And I mention about it because in Poland, we've got a very tough time in the autumn because we've got the first election, parliamentary election. In the spring 2024, we've got a local government election. And on the 9th of June next year, we've got, as all of Europe, election to the European Parliament. And I hope that these issues won't be in the agenda, but unfortunately I note some kind of question, not if will be in the agenda of our parties, but when and how, because we predict that some part of this tension will be used in the not very proper way. So this three sentence, thank you.
I would like to tell you something about attitude Polish society, because our main role is cooperation and support with institution at local and government level. And I think that what we can do in this area, we can support this institution, the employee, to build open and tolerance official who serve public services for different clients, also for foreigners, different groups, of course. And I think that IOM is a good institution to show them that the presence of migrants in our country, especially at the local level, is a huge value for social, economic, and cultural life. Yes, and when we are talking about education of tolerance and non-discrimination, we should think about different groups. Yes, and I think that this Polish institution is very important, because they have influence for creating a law, for create some standards, and for creating some activities in the local areas especially. And what I know about different structure, I think that in the level of voivodeship, there is some structure in Lubelskie voivodeship, for example, in Małopolskie. I know that in Opole, Marshall will be create this kind of structure. I'm not feel free to speak in behalf of their name, yes, but I think that migrants and or refugees are not so invisibility like before the war, yes, and some people try to do something, they see a needs. And I think that most of this institution is learning now, yes, how to integrate, how to cooperate, etc. And for example, I at the beginning of this year, I developed mapping of activities for refugees from Ukraine in all Poland. From 800 response, most of them I got from small cities or districts. So I think that before they didn't even think about integration, about migrants in my cities, yes, because they weren't there, or they weren't they were invisible, yes. But now I can say that all Poland, all local government see that this is necessary. Yes, thank you.
Thank you. So let me pick up bits and pieces which I think may be interesting for you, which I think I could respond to various of the questions. So let's start with the funding. So essentially, I would say there is no a clear-cut answer. So this is the figure. There is earmarked funding that is very easy to say, this is for the purpose of helping people under temporary protection. It's limited. We don't normally earmark funding. So basically, it's very rare that we give a given funding to a member state or a set of stakeholders specifically for the strict purpose of, let's say, supporting people under temporary protection, even though we actually did give such exceptional funding to the Polish authorities in the form of so-called EMAS emergency assistance, and that was the amount of 200 million euros for the Polish Interior Ministry. Of course, this is a minor amount as compared to the actual spending, but the bulk of EU funding is actually giving through structural funds and other dedicated funding. So what we could have done is to give flexibilities to the managing authorities who run these funds in the member states, including in Poland, to use the unspent, underspent amounts for the purpose of supporting displaced people. And they did so in considerable amounts, as I mentioned before, for the regional or the national level. We also provided such opportunities in the current programming period, and the Polish authorities were both national and at the regional level. They were, let's say, very accommodating in terms of envisaging the measures that would be covering the people under temporary protection. This could be done again specifically by, as an example, through the addition of a priority access within the regional operational program, as it was done in 2014-2020. However, it could also be done by extending the target group. So essentially, for to give an example, a training course in accounting or in IT skills could be given to the Polish citizens, but it's possible that the people under temporary protection are also eligible and they are members of that training. In these cases, it is very difficult to say what amount was actually spent for the purpose of supporting the Polish citizens and what amount it was used for the purpose of supporting people under temporary protection. And this is for EU funds only. Then when we have national funds, of course, we have a very considerable amount given through the Polish aid fund, Fundusz Pomocy, which is the national funding to which we partially contributed for the emergency funds. However, this is channeled by the, again, Ministry of Interior, goes to Wojewodowie, the regional governors, and then it is split between municipalities and actors at the local level. Then on the top of that, we have the UNHCR, for instance, funding or funding provided by other donors in the scope of maybe $200 million. I think they operate in US dollars in the previous year and much smaller this year. As many speakers mentioned, donors are withdrawing. But then there is a dedicated amount for UNHCR, which they channeled through their partner organizations at the local level. Is it external? Is it internal? Well, UNHCR is not making business, so they are not funding it for profits of their regular activity, but someone gave it to them, like donors, for instance, EU, Germany, US, and other countries. So it's, again, extremely difficult to trace point to point. Also, other international organizations, IOM, UNICEF, and others, there are private donors, obviously, but the state donors are also important. So, again, very difficult to estimate. Now, on the bright side, in the new programming period, 2021-2027, we have this novelty as regards home funds. So basically the funds from the part of the commission that I represent, this is AMIF, Asylum, Migration and Integration Fund, BMVI, Border Management and Visa Instrument, and Internal Security Fund, ISF. And they are implemented in Poland mainly through the national programs, which are managed by the Ministry of Interior. The novelty which we introduced this year is that this year, or this programming period, if you wish, is that the actors such as NGOs, such as municipal authorities, and such as international organizations are now members of the committee. And there was a process as a result of which IOM and UNHCR are in the committee. The Lublin, the city of Lublin representative is there on behalf of Polish municipalities, and Polish Migration Forum is there as representative of NGOs. There are movements within these groups of organization. For instance, Agnieszka Kosowicz of the Polish Migration Forum, she initiated, also through my encouragement, the process in which the NGOs will have a common view, let's say, expressed in this monitoring committee, which is a great thing. This is exactly what we wanted to do, to have the non-state actors also present in these measures that are very important for migration topics. Finally, just to mention that we normally operate from EU level through the national governments. However, we do have certain options for municipalities, NGOs, and international organizations to be able to apply directly for our funding. This is to give an example under call for proposals. We had just finished one on integration, for which people under temporary protection are eligible. And in these measures, the cities, the NGOs, the international organizations could apply directly to us. However, the funding there is not as substantial, not as voluminous as in the national programs. So in a nutshell, thank you.
Okay.
But we are a bit running out of time, so very brief. Very brief, one, two sentences, because I would like to summarize your contributions.
Answering the question about Ukrainians coming back to Ukraine, because I think that's quite important. We are right now doing this research on collective accommodation, and we see huge parallels between the introduction of this, the novelty of this act on financial participation in collective accommodation with the sudden increase of comebacks to Ukraine from Ukrainians. I'm also right now coming from the border area where we have been conducting the research as well. And we have some data from the local authorities, especially in the border zone. So this is something, you know, it's, we will be publishing this, we'll be focusing in our next report on collective accommodation, but also we will tell about the why those comebacks of Ukrainians, how it is connected with the changing of the legislative framework in Poland as well. So we observe it for sure, it's happening, but it's very much connected with the disinformation and the legal changes.
Thank you, Sarian. So we are, I thought that we will be even quicker, but as you can see, there was a bunch of questions, but also pretty well, but that's good, but also very well developed feedback from all five panelists that we have here. And when I was like following your contributions and your comments, what I have in my mind, but also working on this topic, it makes me think about communicating vessels, if I'm correct, in English, system naczyń połączonych. So you guys represent different organizations, different bodies. I know that sometimes you cooperate, sometimes you criticize each other, but let's say in a constructive way. But anyway, you have to work together because this is what we have here, but also in other countries. So I would say that this is like very complex, beautiful, but sometimes hard love that exists. But to be more serious, this is a good example that unfortunately in emergency conditions, in crisis conditions, we are observing a new quality of cooperation and relations in Poland. Because as you know, before the full-scale aggression of Russia in Ukraine, for example, UNHCR or IOM or UNICEF, they were here. I mean, the offices were here, but only because of this full-scale aggression, their capacities, the infrastructures, but also the budgets were developed. The same is with the presence of different international non-governmental organizations. Nowadays, you have many more of them, many of them still working under the umbrella of something we call Polish NGO Forum Razem. So this is a kind of new quality and added value, even if this is not always very easy. And very often we have discussions, you know, about the human resources, our capacities, our competences, and in each case, always about the money. Because it's always about the money, not only in case of small local NGOs, international NGOs, local governments, but even IOM or UNICEF or UNHCR and European Commission. It's always about the money. So who will pay for what? How it will be organized? If I'm correct, Magda, the project that you discussed today, so these integration centers, they are financed or co-financed under AMIF. Yes? To some extent, not only. So you see, even these big international stakeholders, they are interdependent, interconnected. And the final like keywords from this discussion is obviously money, but also stakeholders and actors, cooperation, sometimes non-cooperation, MLG, so multi-level governance, even if this is like a very well-known concept, highly criticized by some researchers, still, I think that it's very useful in our context, especially if we think about disjointed MLG, disjointed governance subconcept, let's put it in this way. And then, obviously, I made a small joke about non-existent today actor or discussion about the government, but there is something that was good done by the current government. So this was the law on the assistance to Ukrainian citizens that was developed pretty quickly, but we know that they know how to deliver very quickly. But anyway, something was delivered. Obviously, it was, as we say, positive discrimination, because the group of beneficiaries is only limited to Ukrainian citizens and under some conditions to family members. So there is something that was done. Then obviously EC, sometimes I can hear, oh, they do not give money, so where is the EU? So the EU is very often within the multi-annual financial, in EU funds, but EU funds have to be spent in a very specific way via specific channels and programs. So this is what Szymon told us. Magda showed us an example of the so-called CZ in Polish, as we call them. So integration centers that are not only in big cities, but also in a medium-sized and small one, because migrants are also there. And then obviously, as I can see, rather a huge interest with these local level actors, so local governments, but also broadly understood civil society and research activities conducted not by pure researchers, but by NGOs that cooperate with each other. So here I would like, as I do not see questions online, and anyway we are almost after this panel, I would like at the same time close our meeting. So it was not very formal. It was not too scientific, I hope. It was, once again, the place and space to have this exchange, because this is also a kind of our mission, was my colleagues, researchers from migration studies, to make this, make it possible to exchange, interact, make you all new gatekeepers, because anyway, we have to go further. And the situation will not be much better in the coming years, especially if we take into account the political context. So thank you very much for all our guests, because I know that you are busy, but I really appreciate that you joined us. Also to our audience that stayed with us till the end, the audience on site, the audience online. The meeting is recorded, is also documented, and I think that it will be made available publicly very soon. So thank you very much. And now I invite you to join the lunch outside this magic door. Thank you.